This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
I weaken all men for hours each day. I show you strange visions while you are away. I take you by night, by day take you back. None suffer to have me, but do from my lack. What am I? If you thought the answer to that riddle is sleep, you would be absolutely correct. Odds would also be good that you join the many of us who do suffer from its lack. Hello, I'm Lee Chui Lin, and welcome to this month's Health and Living documentary installment, Sleepless in Selangor. Sleep is undoubtedly a crucial part of our well-being and happiness, yet it seems like many busy Malaysians just can't seem to get it right. Today I try to get to the bottom of this, speaking to specialists and sleepers. From learning how humans are different from giraffes.
Look at some animal that sleep very little, like a giraffe. Giraffe, something like 2 hours a day. They are sort of chronically insomnic, but they function well.
To understanding why you can sleep 10 hours and still feel exhausted.
Sometimes there are people who say, I had a good night's sleep for 7 or 8 hours, but they get up very tired in the morning. Simply because the fact it's not just the number of hours, as I earlier mentioned. It is also the quality of sleep that we've had.
This is all about understanding sleep and, of course, sleeplessness.
So important. I'd rather fall asleep right now.
Very. Because I get so little.
Sleep is very important for me because it determines how productive I'll be the next day. If I don't have enough sleep, I can't make decisions very clear.
Very important. Because if I don't sleep, I become very cranky. And when I'm cranky, I can't do work properly. Okay, no, honestly, if I don't get enough sleep, it ruins my day. It ruins how I work, it ruins how I function.
Very important because with the work that I do, you need to focus. So you really do need to have a clear mind. And you only get that when you have enough sleep.
I love sleep. It's incredibly important. I get really, really run down very quickly. I get very moody when I don't have sleep. I would say it's probably up there in the major five priorities after food and everything else.
It's extraordinarily important because I love to sleep and I think I don't get enough of it.
From a physiological standpoint, what does sleep do to our bodies? While it may seem obvious, the truth is that the purpose and mechanism of sleep, as well as the reasons for its necessity, is only partially known. Here's what we do know, though. It repairs our bodies and prepares us for the next day.
Simply put, it's very important because we sleep a third of our lives, and we need sleep to rest our tired body and void to power up for activities the next day. So what happened is that we need sleep essentially, you know, to improve our perceptual skills, enhance our learning, you know, cognitive performance, that sort of thing. So sleep is important.
Dr. Lau Wee Ming, internal medicine specialist with an interest in sleep and respiratory disorders, makes an apt comparison on how not sleeping can throw a kink in the clockwork.
Let's say you have a machine in a factory and you work the machine 24 hours, it will break down. So similarly to the human body, it needs to recuperate. After working, the muscles are tired, you know, there's lots of waste product being generated. So that needs to be shifted away as waste products, and therefore the body need a time where it can do that sort of getting rid of, you know, all this dirt, and it is during sleep that it can do that.
Dr. H.M. Goh, Medical Director and University Malaya Specialist Centre, concurs with the physical impact of getting enough sleep.
Sleeping time is actually a very important phase for us to recover, and there are a lot of physiological repair, you know, at a cellular level is taken place during the sleep. So on average, if we stay awake for 12 hours to 20 hours, certainly we need sufficient time for restoration. So that's what, based on that basis, 8 hours is actually a recommended sleep for adults.
Going beyond the physical, everyone's familiar with that fuzzy mind that happens with lack of sleep. Decisions seem to take longer, as does everything else. Dr. Kumar R.S., a primary physician who runs sleep programs at his clinics, explains why this is so.
Sleep actually plays a vital role in good health and the well-being throughout our lives. And getting enough quality sleep at the right time can help you protect your mental health, your physical health, your quality of life, and sometimes even it applies to safety. especially those who are drivers of heavy vehicles and people who operate machines. It also plays a vital role to boost our day-to-day immune system and in the functioning of our hormones. For example, ongoing sleep deficiency can raise your risk of some of the chronic health problems that we face, like hypertension, diabetes and all, which if you don't have enough sleep, some of these parameters may go up the next day. And also it helps in the sense that it affects how well you think and react, work, learn, and get along with others. Because if you sleep well, your brain works properly.
Recent studies have found that sleep is a time for our brains to clear out the junk that's lying around from the day. For our brains to defragment all the content, like a hard drive. Ultimately, this results in a fresher person, one who is ready to take on the day, to do the proverbial spring out of bed. Dr. Goh sums it up.
It's beneficial to cardiovascular system, means that your heart, your blood pressure. Also, increasing studies that link sleep deprivations with the ability of body to repair itself. That means that it will actually reduce cancer risk. I mean, that's quite alarming to know that chronic sleep deprivation has actually now some correlation with cancer. Certainly mind, in terms of concentration, ability to retain memories, you know, ability to maintain attention span, it's important. Sleep will, as I mentioned earlier, stage 3, stage 4, non-REM stage of the sleep is where the brain will consolidate what you learn in the morning, mm-hmm. in the daytime when you are awake. So if a student who are trying to prepare for exams and because of the sleeplessness and they get insomnia and they don't get stage 3, stage 4 sleep, then you will not able to retain what you learn.
So the importance of sleep is undisputed. But how much sleep do we need to reap all its benefits?
Recently, it's down to about 4. It has been worse than that. It has been much better than that. So I think round about the last week, I think I've been touching 5.
I figured out that about 6 hours is pretty good for my body. 8 sometimes is a bit too much, strangely enough, but I guess it depends on the day.
6. So when you sleep for about 6 or 7 hours and you actually offset it by some exercise, yeah, you feel at your most optimum, right? So I think that's always the balance that I'm always trying to look for. But if you just sleep, and I know this from summer holidays, if you just sleep continuously 7 hours, 8 hours, 9 hours, day after day without doing any exercise, you feel pretty awful as well.
7 to 8. Because I notice as you get older, you really do need sleep. You can't just depend on 4 hours and be Mary Poppins the next day. You just can't.
About, I would say, 6 to 8 hours. That is just enough. Usually if I'm having not enough sleep is when I get about 4 to 5 hours of sleep, and then that's when cranky trigger comes into play.
On average, I think I sleep 6 hours, though in the last couple of months I think I've slept 4 hours.
I think on average between 5 to 7, it's never enough. I think 8 is good. After 8, I feel kind of like a reboot. Anything less than 6, then I think it's like a waste.
8 hours has been the golden standard for many years now, though its ascendancy appears to be all down to the law of averages. Dr. Kumar puts a number to the discussion.
Although some people claim to feel rested on just a few hours of sleep at night, research actually shows that people who sleep so little over many nights don't perform as well on complex mental tasks as do people who get closer to 7 hours of sleep a night. Studies among adults also shows that getting less or much more than 7 hours of sleep at night is not really the optimum. Just like our ancestors who slept in 2 blocks, 4 hours each, which makes up a total of 8 hours of sleep, nowadays, the total of 8 hours is still recommended for our bodies because it is needed on a regular basis for optimal performance, because the kind of jobs that we do these days are very demanding, they're very stressful, it requires probably clear thinking, decision making. So if our sleep pattern is affected, I'm sure it's bound to have some kind of a repercussion.
While age might just be a number, it also manifests in very real physical ways, with sleep being key amongst them. Both Dr. Kumar and Dr. Goh point out that our needs and hours change quite a bit from the cradle to old age.
Well, I think to a large extent that mainly depends on the age. I mean, if you look at newborns, you know, probably between up to 3 months, they actually require about 12 to 18 hours of sleep. And if you look at infants, which we can say something between 3 to 11 months, they require probably a bit lesser, 14 to 15 hours. And looking at toddlers, between 1 to 3 years, they probably need about 12 to 14 hours. Then, of course, then once they grow out of that, you have the preschool, the school age, the teens, and the adults. Coming back to adults, they require about 7 to 9 hours. So between the preschoolers and the teens, it can be anything varying between 9 to 11 or 12 hours. So it depends on which category the person belongs to.
The conventional sleep pattern is quite hard to maintain. In fact, human at various stages of their life have a different sleep pattern. So, for example, newborn babies, you see them sleep most of the time because on average, they will probably sleep about 16 to 18 hours a day. Mm-hmm. As they grow bigger, by the time they hit about a year old, as a toddler, they will probably about 13 to 14 hours. As adult, on average, we sleep probably about 8 hours. And as you age, as older adults, we tend to sleep less, 6 to 7 hours per day, and they probably take more frequent naps as well.
More often than not, how long we sleep also depends on what time we get to bed and whether we listen to what our bodies are telling us. It used to be thought that it all comes down to something called the circadian rhythm.
Circadian rhythm is, put it in a simple way, essentially is an internal clock that regulates the pattern of our sleep and waking. It interacts with what we call a sleep homeostat. So most living things have internal circadian rhythms. Human, animals, we all have our own circadian rhythm. And it's a concept which has been described for quite a number of years. In fact, it was described first by a scientist in France in 1729.
But as Dr. Lau points out, it goes beyond that. The circadian rhythm is part of it, but the body also makes its own preparations.
The clock is determined by a visual cue of light. So let's say if our eyes see light, right? So the brain will say, okay, you're supposed to be awake. When the eyes see dark and it's night, and the brain says, you go to sleep. But in addition to the circadian rhythm that it's controlled by this clock, the sleep is also controlled by the pressure to sleep. The pressure to sleep essentially means how tired the person is.
The pressure to sleep arises from hormones in the system telling us that the time to sleep is not nigh, it is now.
But over the years, I think the understanding of sleep has gone beyond circadian rhythms. We actually know there are a lot of hormonal relationship to sleep. Mm-hmm. The circadian rhythm, I mean, the internal clock actually regulates certain hormones. You will probably hear terms like melatonin, which is the hormones that make us feel sleepy. And when we are sleepy, then the melatonin level will rise. There's other brain chemicals that we know nowadays, like, for example, serotonin. There's another brain chemical. When we are awake, the serotonin is actually highest. So I think the internal clock and the hormone will be the key relationship that regulates our physiology to function as a human optimally.
Interestingly, while the desire to sleep may be universal, our desire for it to be uninterrupted for a full 8 hours is perhaps a relatively new convention. Dr. Lau explains.
A long time ago, human beings actually slept in two blocks of 4 hours. So they were, when the sun set, they would sleep for 4 hours, then they'll wake up for 1 or 2 hours to do some sort of activity and then go back to sleep again. But with the advent of light technology, this has disappeared. And, of course, a whole host of other sort of electrical gadgets, entertainment, and more sort of night-related activities. So this has disappeared.
It appears that with the advent of artificial light and the ability for us to control it, this has died out. I was curious, though. Might some evolutionary quirk be the reason why some just can't seem to sleep through the night, and maybe, just maybe, it's time to embrace that strange twilight between the time you actually wake up and the time you wanted to wake up? Dr. Lau breaks down the basic math for us.
It varies what we call 3 to 5 cycles of sleep. So every cycle we have, it's about 90 to 100 minutes. So if you work out 3 to 5 cycles, then people should be getting 5 to 8 hours.
But it would seem that we're asking the wrong question to begin with. It's not about quantity.
humans are not designed to stay awake at night. So whether it's in two blocks or it's in an 8-hour stretch, it really depends on whether the quality of sleep is there.
Coming up, a clearer picture on what quality sleep entails, right here on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, you are listening to The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin, and this is our monthly documentary installment on health and living. Today, it's all about being sleepless in Selangor, or really anywhere else you might be.
Well, sleep that's uninterrupted generally is very good. And one in which when I wake up, I feel rested. I don't immediately think, oh my God, I really want to just continue sleeping for another hour because I feel like death.
Undisturbed sleep with no bad dreams.
A good night's sleep for me is shutting my eyes for the night and opening them to morning. That means it was uninterrupted sleep throughout. That makes me feel good psychologically.
A good sleep to me is when I don't have any thoughts, any dreams at all. I just go to rest thinking about how beautiful the next day is going to be, and then the next thing I know is I'm awake again, all fresh up.
The time that I get up and I actually feel rested and my body doesn't ache and I don't have a headache and I don't feel dehydrated. Just getting up and feeling as though I'm ready to do a day. A lot of the time I just get up and I'm like, I could literally go straight back to bed and sleep another 10 minutes, 5 hours, whatever, you know.
And then you know when you've had that sleep, because the next day you kind of spring out of bed instead of snooze for an hour.
I guess you kind of know it when you wake up and you feel well rested and you don't feel like, where did the 8 hours go? Yeah, you kind of know, because sometimes you get 8 hours, but it's not proper REM and all that. So quality of sleep is also important, not just the number of hours you get every night.
So rather than thinking about how long we're sleeping, it's increasingly clear that it's more about how well we sleep in the hours we have. Dr. Lau Yiming is an internal medicine specialist with an interest in sleep and respiratory disorders. She explains what good sleep means from a medical perspective.
So usually what happens is a good sleep is that will mean the person get to bed, he sleep within about 10-20 minutes. As soon as his head touches the pillow, he continues to sleep. And his brain doesn't sort of get woken up, even though he's sleeping. And that sort of causes arousals, and that affects his, what we call a disruptive pattern on his sleep architecture, or what we call a hypnogram on sleep study. So that would not be a good night's sleep.
Before the person actually sleeping, it's all about how they feel upon awakening.
But at the end of the day, what the person should get is the quality, and quality means waking up feeling refreshed and functioning optimally throughout the day. That would be that. So it's a retrospective thing. You know, like they said, okay, I have a good night's sleep because I can do all these things in the daytime.
Dr. H.M. Goh, Medical Director at University Malaya Specialist Centre, presses the point home. It depends on our different lifestyles, but quality is key.
We have to move towards the concept of quality of sleep rather than quantity of sleep in terms of the hours. If you look at the people who are chronically having sleep disruptions, say occupational disruptions, so like shift workers, mm-hmm, in the factories, airlines, so stewardess, pilots, health workers work in emergency department, long-distance drivers, So they would have been adapting to different circadian cycle and a sleep pattern, and they would have a body would have adjusted to their waking hours work pattern. So the physiological level of hormones of alertness will have to adapt to the kind of work sleep wake cycle that they are exposed to on a day to day basis.
And the key to getting that quality is understanding the different levels of sleep.
Because when we sleep, there are actually different phases of sleep. They have what we call a non-REM stage and REM stage, your rapid eye movement. You probably heard this terms being used. So really what's important is whether what stages of our sleep were in a deep sleep versus a light sleep, and on how much of the time was spent on the rapid eye movement stage.
Dr. Kumar RS, a primary physician who runs sleep programs at his clinic, explains exactly what those different levels are.
In stage one of the what we call as a non-rapid eye movement, this stage actually lasts about the first 5 minutes when you put your head on your pillow. Your eyes move slowly under the eyelids, muscle activity slow down, and at that stage you can of course be very easily awakened. Then you have the stage two, which is actually called light sleep. This is the first stage of true sleep, lasting from 10 to about 25 to 30 minutes. Your eye movement stops, your heart rate slows down, and your body temperature decreases. Then we move on to stage three, or what's called or referred to as deep sleep. Here, it is difficult to awaken, and if you are awakened, you do not adjust immediately, and often you get up feeling a bit groggy and disoriented for a few minutes. It is in this deeper stage of sleep, or stage three, that your brain waves are extremely slow. Blood is directed away from your brain and towards your muscles and to restore physical energy. So that is actually the stage in which you get that absolute sleep kind of thing. So many of us, when we sleep, we may be going through the transition sleep to the light sleep, but not actually getting enough of what's called deep sleep.
Dr. Goh takes an even closer look at what all these separate levels indicate and further delineates the distance between non-REM and REM sleep.
Non-rapid eye movement sleeps, which should take up about 75 to 85% of the sleeping time. And non-REM sleep itself, there are four stages. So in the non-REM phase, they have different phases. Like, for example, there's a cyclical process. Each process about 90 to 110 minutes per cycle. And there are three phases. Phase one is where our brain wave is called a light sleep phase. It's just like when you have this, when you fall asleep, you have this out-of-body experience, or sometimes you have this falling experience. I'm sure most people have experienced that. That's called a hypnic jerk. So those are REM, non-REM stage one. So after that, once you pass into the REM stage one, your brain will send different signals. We actually, if you put electrodes on the head, we actually can see there are waves called, when you're awake, we emit a waves called beta waves. That's when the sleep studies are able to tell us what the quality of sleep. Then the person will slowly move into stage two. Mm-hmm. Stage two, that's when your heart rate will start to slow down. And stage two is the true part of sleep, because the largest part of sleep durations in 45% of adults will be stage two. Stage two, if you are woken up before you reach stage two, you might as well not sleeping at all. Because stage one is just a light sleep, getting into the act of sleeping. Stage two is actually the true sleep. And then we will move to stage three, stage four, sleep, which we call a synchronized sleep, so very deep sleep. If you're woken up in stage 3 or 4, I think you will feel very groggy. You're disorientated. I'm sure you have this experience before. I mean, you wake up when you are in stage 3, mm-hmm. you will be totally out of place. And so that means that the person is already went to stage 3 sleep. And the stage 3 is very important because the brain will consolidate what it learns during the day when we are awake. Mm-hmm. So if a person has very little stage 3 or stage 4 sleep, they will find that their mental performance will be affected. So if you have a lot of small, short cat nap, but it's always hovering in stage one, mm-hmm. actually those are waste of time type of sleep.
A lack of deep sleep is why 12 hours can go by with you lying asleep in bed, and yet you wake up feeling like you barely slept, as Dr. Kumar explains.
sometimes there are people who say I had a good night's sleep for 7 or 8 hours, but they get up very tired in the morning. Simply because of the fact it's not just the number of hours, as I earlier mentioned, it is also the quality of sleep that we've had. And I'm sure you heard, not only recently, I think for quite some time now, on this condition called sleep apnea, which a lot of people suffer but don't realize they're having it. So sleep apnea is a condition where during the snoring process when we sleep, insufficient oxygen reaches the brain. So you have a period of waxing and waning where there's no oxygen and then oxygen supply comes, that kind of thing. So, of course, you get up tired, assuming that you have thought that you have slept 8 hours. Your brain has actually got only about 4 hours or 3 hours of rest.
So, what has been established? That it's all about the quality of sleep and not the quantity or even the pattern. How then can we go about making sure we get that quality rather than wasting a third of our lives never getting enough rest?
A couple of years ago, I thought, well, maybe it's because I'm not exercising properly. I changed that. You know, I exercise regularly. I swim a lot. I run a lot. That really hasn't changed things. I've tried playing around with my diet. That hasn't really changed things. I've tried consuming less caffeine. That really doesn't make a difference. I mean, there used to be a point a few years ago where I could have a cup of coffee 10 minutes before bed and I would sleep like a baby. So it really didn't make any difference. So at this juncture, I'm kind of like, what am I supposed to do now? I'm 37 and I should be able to sleep.
It's all about having a decent ritual. So I think if you try and get a bed by 12, you're safe. But between Candy Crush and pirated film, you get usually 4.
What I could do is, in fact, get to bed earlier because I wake up very early these days. I could also, I think, just to improve the quality of my sleep, get a better bed. Because it's amazing, when I go to a hotel, those pillows and mattresses, I think, were they made in heaven?
I have to be conscious about the way I sleep, meaning, because you know, people sleep on their stomachs and on their back and on their sides and stuff. But if I actually do sort of position myself very specifically on the bed with, you know, my head facing the ceiling and stuff, then I'm ready for a good sleep.
I can kick my cats out and I could sleep in a different room from my husband who snores. That would work as well.
Dr. H.M. Goh suggests that while we may all think we're experts in sleep, having done it from birth, what we need is some education.
Distraction. I think sleeping is important knowledge that we need to learn. We always take it for granted that we know how to sleep because you don't have to learn how to sleep. Like, for example, I think preparations towards sleeping, you know, to understand the physiology of sleep is very important.
There are several factors for why someone might be having trouble sleeping, and some are serious. It might boil down to stress, as Dr. Lau points out.
There are actually many factors. One is that the insomniacs, they usually have, stress problem, stress-related problem. It may be something they're worrying about. Or it may be something, you know, usually they will, okay, let me put it in another way. The factors that can affect sleep will be things like their work, what work they do, right? Sometimes you have people who work at odd hours of the night or day, the shift workers, the medication they take. So sometimes what happens is they take medication to keep themselves awake, for exam sake or project, or they drink lots of coffee. So, drinking lots of caffeine, drinking lots of Coke, those are beverages can keep them awake. And usually insomniacs, sometimes what happens is they can't fall asleep in the night. So they are waking at night and in the morning they feel sleepy. So when they feel sleepy, the next thing they do is they go for the coffee or the cola or the Coke.
Dr. Kumar concurs that much of it has to do with the way we live.
People who suffer, or rather suffer from what's called insomnia, have got multiple reasons. It may be one, it may be multiple. I mean, to a large extent, a lot of it is related to our lifestyle. That is why today you see the emphasis, you see the Ministry of Health, you see all the health-related institutions gearing towards what's called healthy lifestyle. Because if you lead an unhealthy lifestyle, then these are the things that can be prompted by our eating habits, our physical activity and our sleeping habits. So things like weight gain, sleep apnea, or obstructive sleep apnea. And some people, they have certain ENT, ear, nose, and throat-related disorders, which is actually causing them some kind of an obstruction. And, of course, stress, anxiety, all these are things, as I said, you know, related to lifestyle, related to work, related to the kind of activity that we do today. We eat, I mean, Malaysians love to eat their food. And because when you eat and then you don't have exercise, and then they compound it with drinking and smoking habits. So all this put together can actually contribute to what we call as an individual not having sufficient sleep.
And as he notes, it might actually be indicative of other underlying conditions.
Other than that, it can be underlying pathological problem. For example, we have patients who have severe sleep apnea and they snore and they get obstructed in their breathing in the night. And as a result, they get choked and they wake up and they are afraid to go to sleep because as soon as they go to sleep, they're choked and they felt that they are they're almost drowned in the sleep or dying, so they can't sleep. So there are a lot of factors that contribute to not being able to sleep.
Therefore, for people who struggle to get to sleep and who want nothing more than for the sheep counting to end in a fluffy pile of snores, Dr. Goh has a suggestion.
For example, if you know that the length of sleep is not as important as the quality of sleep, then you probably end up thinking that, if I sleep long enough, then I will be able to repay my sleep debt. So, first of all, maybe 30 minutes before you go to sleep, you must get yourself into act of sleeping. You know, sometimes we recommend people take into some form of routine. We sometimes precondition our mind, you know, by wearing pajamas, get into the bedroom, turn down the lights, make sure the phone is switched off, then get into a comfortable bed, put a nice position, and then try to sleep. Try not to check on handphones, read lots of scary stories, you know, on the books. So everyone can actually develop their own routine of pre-sleep routines. I think that's very important. In fact, studies have also shown that if you keep the lights on, I think lights has a lot of effect on quality of sleep. Because the body will, the sleep center in the head will actually react to lights. So we actually prefer patients to actually switch off the lights when they sleep, because it will affect the melatonin levels. Like when we are traveling, when we have this daylight mixed up during because of time zone, and then you realize that your sleep pattern will actually go haywire. So to make sure to have a good management of the light.
Yes, strangely that 20 minutes, let's say, after lunch even, like after that 20 minutes, you really feel really fresh. It's really strange. So, yes, proponent.
But it's like a monthly cycle thing. Only when I'm having menses, probably the first 2 days, there are times I get really tired in the afternoon, but a 20-minute power nap is just sufficient enough to get me throughout the day.
I'm going to say yes, but I don't think it works for me simply because you desire for more. And I think that makes that whole situation worse. Because, for example, I'm about to go on air in about half an hour from now. So I think I can, clock in like a 10-minute power nap. I think it makes it worse. I think I feel even more tired and even sleepier.
Yes, because then I can watch movies late at night.
Love them. Because I feel as though there is a time when your body is telling you you need to recharge immediately. It's like a light is blinking and you just know, if I don't do something very soon, if I don't put my eyes down or my head down for the next 10 minutes, I'm not going to be able to see the rest of the day out.
No, doesn't work for me. 10 minutes is just, 2 hours for me. So, no.
Great. Power naps are the most brilliant thing. I think nature intended us to have power naps. It's the only way I get through the day.
Unless you are listening to this in Spain or Italy, siestas are not a part of your day, or at least certainly not intentional ones. But you don't have to be on another continent to appreciate the restorative powers of the sleep formerly known as the cat nap, now known as the power nap. What needs to be kept in mind is that the duration of the nap really does matter.
Studies have shown that people actually feel recharged after a nap. The important thing is that the nap should not be more than 30 minutes, because once it's more than 30 minutes, then they go into the cycle of 90-100 minutes. And if they go into the stage of slow wave sleep, which is stage N3, and they wake up, they feel groggy and disorientated during that phase.
20 minutes is the number to take note of, but that doesn't mean longer naps might not still benefit you, just in different ways.
The 20-minute power nap, I'm sure in some countries, even I was told that in Japan and all, in between lunchtime, during the lunch break, they have what is called a 20-minute power nap. And this actually, they go into what's called the stage 2 nap. This kind of 20-minute nap or power nap is actually good for alertness and motor learning skills like typing, playing the piano, working on the computer. I mean, no, of course, nobody is playing the piano in the middle of the day. But I think to a large extent, it's the computers that we are working on these days that can be very stressful and demanding because we are working on a job. So I think this kind of a power nap just puts your system back again. Because if you nap for more than 20 minutes, research also shows that longer naps help boost memory and enhance creativity.
So if you've got an understanding boss or an arrangement that could accommodate it, naps are the way to go. But you need discipline and conditioning and, as Dr. Goh reminds us, education.
Yes, if your lifestyle allows you to take afternoon nap, of course. Power naps, in fact, if you are able to get into the full stages of sleep, you can go into deep sleep, even if you're given half an hour power naps, that would be wonderful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just that not everyone is able to do that. Some people actually learn and condition themselves to do that. Like doctors like us, if we work in an on-call basis, we can actually fall asleep very quickly. Because we develop our personal routine, and then we can get out of sleep pretty quickly and get back on our feet and start thinking again your emergent situation. But sometimes we need some help from other hormones, like adrenaline will wake you up very fast. For example, if you're cardiac arrest, we wake up very fast and we function quickly. But really depends on how your body conditions. So actually it's important that every individual must have a sleep awareness, meaning that they must know, they must learn how to sleep. They have to, if they have sleeping difficulty, then it's important to see a sleep expert to learn, to teach them how to get a quality sleep.
Ernest Hemingway once said, "I love sleep. My life has the tendency to fall apart when I'm awake, you know?" While the rest of us may not live lives filled with bullfights, lion hunting, and disastrous love affairs, we can all agree on the first part of that statement. I love sleep. So take those naps, put those habits in place, and let's all get the sleep we deserve. You've been listening to The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.